Hello, and welcome to another episode of Right Cared Baptist. I'm Jake Lancaster, an internal medicine physician and the chief medical officer for the Baptist Medical Group.
And I'm Amanda Comer. I'm the chief advanced practice officer.
And today we're really excited to have on Ann Lawson Hobart to talk about all things nutrition. She's one of our registered dietitians. Ann Lawson, do you mind just giving the audience a little preview of your background and what you do?
Sure. So I'm Ann Lawson Hobart. I am a registered dietitian and a licensed dietitian. I have my master's in dietetics and nutrition from Ole Miss, and I have a completed internship or dietetic internship from Mississippi State University. I am
We're not going to hold that
certified.
against you.
Please
We're
don't.
Fans on here.
I am certified as a nutrition support clinician, and I am now the dietitian at Baptist Medical Group Outpatient Care Center in Germantown.
Well, we're really excited to have you on. As maybe a lot of people know, doctors, nurse practitioners, and others, we don't get a lot of education in nutrition or dietetics. I never even heard of that word until you just said it. So we're really excited to learn something today. So can you tell us just the very basics? What is a dietitian?
Yeah, so a dietitian is the only nutrition expert. A lot of people like to claim that they are experts in a lot of things with nutrition, but dietitians are the only expert. They have completed a master's degree that is a requirement for the profession. They've completed an internship from an accredited university, are licensed in whatever state that they're practicing in, and they recommend evidence-based nutrition recommendations to their patients.
That's great. So tell me, what can a patient expect from a dietitian and a dietitian's services?
They can expect a lot of different things. The type of therapy that dietitians practice is called medical nutrition therapy, or MNT. And what that encompasses is just a conversation to really get to know the patient and figure out how to best manage their medical conditions through a nutrition foundation.
Yeah, and you said this a little bit earlier, but can you just explain the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist? We hear those terms thrown out a lot and just want to get some clarity on it.
That's a great question, because there is a difference. So I explained a little bit about what a dietitian is and what it requires to become registered. A nutritionist, in contrast, is that term nutritionist is not a regulated term, meaning anybody can claim that they're a nutritionist and it not really mean much. Most nutritionists don't practice evidence-based guidelines like dietitians do, and they can only give general nutrition advice. They can't diagnose patients or treat specific medical conditions like dietitians can. And unfortunately, a lot of times nutritionists are giving recommendations based on personal experience without much scientific backing.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay, so can you walk me through a patient experience or an encounter?
Sure. So when a patient comes into our clinic for a medical nutrition therapy assessment, how that looks is they'll sit down with me and I usually ask them what they are wanting to learn or what they're wanting to get out of this conversation. And that's what I base the assessment off of, what changes they are looking to make and what maybe health conditions they are looking to improve. Most of the time, those health conditions are either based on heart health, obesity, someone trying to lose weight, improve their diabetes management, or another health condition. We talk about their different medications and how they might play a role in different foods that they're eating or any sort of barrier that they're having when it comes to not meeting specific health goals.
And do you get a lot of referrals from physicians to you, or are these patients coming to you on their own? What does that look like?
Most of the time, they are referrals from physicians. A lot of patients will tell me that they have requested a referral, but we do require a referral in order to schedule an appointment. So it's either that the patient is driving that conversation with their PCP, or the physician has reached out because the patient has maybe exhausted some of those other ways to better manage a health condition.
I have a second question. You mentioned the goals of the patient earlier. Are there ever differences in what the physician's goals are for the patient and the patient's own goals?
There can be, for sure. Sometimes the patients, a big one is with weight loss or obesity. A lot of patients have these really huge weight loss goals that maybe just aren't realistic for their time frame. They're wanting to lose maybe 100 pounds in 2 months, and that's where the conversation just goes a little bit deeper, and we talk about how to make realistic goals instead of that are more achievable instead of some blown out ones.
So you mentioned a few conditions like hypertension, diabetes, obesity. Are there others that you see for common referrals?
Those are the big ones. Another one has to do with cholesterol, how to get your cholesterol levels improved. A lot of patients either are on medications for cholesterol that just still aren't working as well as maybe they think that they should, or some patients can't take some of those cholesterol lowering medications for some reason. And so the next step is figuring out, well, how can we make some nutrition changes to improve those levels altogether?
Yeah. So walk me through a patient example. You get a new patient with diabetes, for instance.
Sure.
What does that encounter look like, and what can you expect as far as outcomes if I'm the referring provider?
So if they were to come to our clinic for diabetes, we also offer diabetes self-management training, which is a little bit different than medical nutrition therapy. So I would always encourage a patient with diabetes to use that resource first so that they really get a good grasp of how to manage those issues with diabetes, if it is monitoring, if it's taking medications, if it is the nutrition aspect, or even exercise. As far as medical nutrition therapy, we can continue that conversation from their diabetes self-management training after they finish that, and maybe go down the nutrition avenue further and talk about ways to count carbohydrates, really define what carbohydrates are. Because out of all of the food groups in our plate, so there's protein, there's fat, and carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are the main food group that's affecting blood sugar levels, so it's the one that we focus on the most.
Yeah, you mentioned counting carbs, sorry. Are patients, when I was thinking about that, or thinking counting calories, sometimes it can feel intimidating to count things. Is there easy ways, or how do you counsel a patient that it's not going to be as difficult as it sounds?
Patients who are maybe a little overwhelmed with numbers, I tell them you don't have to count things. You can zoom out and just look at your plate. And we present it as, and we do follow the American Diabetes Association's guidelines for what a consistent carbohydrate diet might look like, or a diabetic-friendly diet, to where if you are looking at your plate of food and if you divide it in half, half of the food on your plate really should be made up of what are called non-starchy vegetables. The other half of your plate should be divided 50-50 between a lean protein source and then a healthy carbohydrate. So if most of your plates of food truly are balanced in that manner, then you're already following those diabetic-friendly guidelines without necessarily having to count things.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah, that's helpful. I've also seen like plates that
The
have it
plates.
drawn out for you. So tell me, what does a typical diabetic diet look like? Do you prescribe a meal plan, a weekly meal plan? What does that look like?
Not necessarily a meal plan. So, as a dietitian, my goal is not to give you this list of foods to eat every day of the week. That is not super realistic for everybody, but my job is to teach you how to create your own meal plans. When it comes to, we start out with that plate method, like I was just explaining, and then with the medical nutrition therapy, we can dive a little bit deeper into each section of our plate. So, looking at the proteins, looking at the carbohydrates, and then those non-starchy vegetables, we can go into a little more individualized approach about how many maybe grams, how many ounces.
So it sounds much more than just a meal plan. It sounds like you also offer strategies for the patient to be successful.
That's right. So after we talk about that general plate method for how to kind of portion out your those macronutrients, we do go into a little more detail about how much of those foods to put on your plate. As far as amount of protein goes, we can talk about the specific grams of protein the patient might need, and then what that looks like as far as real food, how many ounces of chicken, for instance, to put on your plate, or as far as carbohydrates go, how many grams of carbohydrates are needed at every meal.
And we had talked earlier about some people may use ChatGPT or other AI tools to create their own meal plans. Is that a good strategy, or what do you see when you have patients do that?
It's an okay strategy. I think ChatGPT is a great way to come up with meal ideas for patients who are kind of lost in the sauce of what to cook every single day. But as far as it being a 100% true resource for coming up with a nutrition guideline for them, it's still lacking in its recommendations.
In what ways have you seen?
Especially the different amounts of macronutrients for patients. It might be a little too high on the calorie range or a little too low on the protein range or carbohydrate. So those numbers are just a little skewed. So what I encourage patients to do is if you want to ask Chat to create a meal plan for you, they can bring it in and then we can fine-tune it and better or just improve it so that it fits you on a more individual basis to improve those goals.
That sounds good. So you mentioned you're from the Mississippi Delta. You know, when I think about patients, often they live in areas with food deserts or lack of access to healthy, nutritious foods. How do you work around that, or what are your suggestions that you have for our patients?
That's definitely a challenge, even here in the Memphis metro area where we think there are lots of grocery stores available and opportunities to get healthier food items, but it's still a challenge. We focus on making one simple change at a time. If a patient's biggest challenge is trying to maybe reduce the amount of sodium that they're consuming in a diet to help out with cardiovascular reasons, we might encourage them instead of choosing processed meat maybe 5 days a week, cutting that down to maybe 2 days a week or 3 days a week. We really try to meet the patient where they are.
What about those that are just very busy? I know I often 2 or 3 days a week have to drive a kid to soccer practice or baseball practice, and we don't have time to sit down and cook and have a healthy meal. What do you advise patients that are in those situations?
Like for convenience,
Yeah, healthy
healthy
convenience.
convenience.
There is a way to make convenience foods healthy, and even the grocery stores have tried to help us with that. An example is if you look at the produce section in the grocery store, they have already pre-chopped up fruits and vegetables so that they've taken that step out of the prep of a meal. Another example is using frozen foods in the steamable pouches. That's a great idea for people who are maybe short on time but are still trying to get a healthy, nutritious meal on the table.
Yeah, what a, so going through Chick-fil-A is not something you would recommend, or
Maybe not every day,
yeah.
but one thing too that I do tell people is one meal or even one day's worth of meals is not going to affect your health in that drastic of a manner. It's what you do on a daily, everyday basis that adds up to how healthy you are.
What about medications? How do you alter a plan based on the medications the patient's on?
We really focus our nutrition, maybe counseling, on the health condition and not necessarily the medication. However, there are certain medications that we take into account when making some sort of nutrition recommendation. For instance, patients who have been on maybe metformin for years and years and years are at a higher risk of being deficient in like B12. So for them, I would encourage just a healthier diet that is a little higher, maybe some of those foods with B12 in it. Another example is people on those GLP-1 agonist medications who usually aren't eating a lot of food to begin with. The challenge can be that they are not getting enough protein in. So those patients, I might focus our nutritional counseling a little heavier on the protein intake.
Have you seen a lot of new patients recently since those have kind of become more of a phenomenon over the last 5 years?
I really have,
Yeah.
and what I do appreciate is the doctors are seeing the importance of a dietitian now, which is great, and our role in that support for weight loss. So a lot of patients will either start on a GLP-1 agonist medication and either not have success because they're not making some of those lifestyle changes, including diet changes and exercises, and they're frustrated. So that's where they might come and sit down with me, and we can figure out really what's going on and how to improve their eating habits.
Okay.
So the increase in patients for that has, we have definitely seen that.
So we talked a little bit about ChatGPT, and then the access to online resources. What about misinformation or misconceptions that patients present with?
Unfortunately, in the world of social media that we live in, there's a lot of nutrition misinformation out there and misconceptions. One of the biggest, and as silly as it sounds, is how people have demonized certain foods that are very healthy for us. Fruit is one of those examples. I get so many patients who come to me and say, "I can't eat fruit, it's bad for me." And I'm like, "There are so many good things about fruit. It's very beneficial for us." So the misconception of just certain foods, especially like bananas or grapes, that I'm just having to combat is a challenge. I'm just having to almost rewire how people are thinking about foods.
Interesting.
What about, I feel like recently we've seen a huge uptake, I guess, in the amount of protein that people are trying to consume, and it's in every food now.
That's
They're
right.
in, I've seen protein in cereals now. So what's going on there, and what do you recommend?
That is another misconception, unfortunately. We're in this protein craze movement, and there really shouldn't be any justification to it because most Americans, men especially, are already over-consuming protein. So why are we pushing it even more? When it comes to those certain food items like the protein cereal, protein chips, protein coffee even, there's no real rhyme or reason to needing those certain foods, and I wouldn't really encourage it unless there is reason for it. So, and we would, that would be more of an individual approach to those.
What's your favorite superfood?
So really, there is no
Okay.
superfood. Superfoods are just,
I'm following a lot of influencers.
yeah,
It's starting
superfoods are
right
just
now.
those with better marketing team than others,
Okay.
unfortunately. So for instance, blueberries are thought to be this superfood because they have so many great antioxidants, but a lot of other foods have great antioxidants too.
Okay.
Any underappreciated foods that you like to recommend?
An underappreciated food group, maybe, or another nutrient is fiber. Most Americans don't get enough fiber to begin with, and it could be a reason why we have such issues with heart disease, diabetes, obesity, even, is because most people don't get enough fiber. So I really harp on that nutrient with patients.
Any other misconceptions that you hear? I don't know if this is correct or not, but I forever was taught that brown rice was healthier than white rice. And then I saw somebody in an influencer post recently that that was actually not the case. So can you dispel some myths about, which rice should we be eating?
Sure. So there is a lot of unfortunate food noise in the influencer world again. So just trying to turn down that noise as much as you can. As far as brown rice versus white rice or maybe some of the others, I always encourage brown rice just because you are getting a little bit more fiber from it. Again, that's a nutrient that most of us are lacking, compared to the white rice.
What about continuous glucose monitoring and what you've seen? I've seen even some non-diabetic patients put these on and try to adjust their diet to decrease spikes in blood glucose. Have you seen that in your clinic? What do you
Sure.
advise? Is it worthwhile to try to do?
I think everybody with either prediabetes or diabetes especially should be wearing a continuous glucose monitor. It is really the only way to know what's going on internally because you can't see that from the outside.
Do you look at that data? They bring it to you and you
We
help them?
can. So it's the CGMs, the data is on their phone. So normally people have their phone with them, and I just tell them to open up the app and let's go through it. And we kind of explain and see if we look at their history and see if they had a spike, and maybe we talk about what caused that, or the opposite. If they're having low blood sugars, what caused that, and how to prevent those complications from occurring again.
Are there any surprising things to patients that are causing spikes that they wouldn't have thought of?
So everybody's digestive system is very unique to them. So different foods are going to affect different people in a completely different manner. So it really is just about learning your body and what affects you, is what I tell people. Some people are more sensitive to rice, is one of them, compared to others. Some people are more sensitive to certain fruits than others. So it is shocking to the patient to kind of break that down and figure out how foods affect their blood sugar.
That's interesting. And for the listeners, can you speak a little bit about why we do not want that fluctuation in insulin or blood sugar?
Blood
Yeah,
sugars.
blood sugars.
So when it comes to diabetes management, consistency is the key. So we really don't want your blood sugar going way, way too high and then way, way too low, because that roller coaster effect is what we consider more of uncontrolled diabetes. So you do your blood sugar will naturally rise and fall after and before and after eating foods, but we don't want drastic rises and drops because that does lead to complications.
What about supplements? We're also seeing just a huge push for all these off-label supplements that people are taking. Do you see that in your practice? And what do you advise patients that are taking supplements or thinking about taking supplements?
Yeah, I always ask patients about their supplement use. It's just as important as medications. Certain supplements can actually interfere with medications and make them maybe not absorb as readily.
Can
And
you give some
patients
examples?
kind of forget about that. Ginkgo biloba can interact with certain things. Milk thistle can interact with
Okay.
certain things. A lot of people with diabetes are taking sometimes these, sometimes other ones, like berberine is a big one I'm seeing these days. There's really no scientific evidence supporting the use of supplements for diabetes, especially. And I don't ever recommend using specific nutrition supplements unless you are proven deficient in some sort of vitamin or mineral. A lot of people are deficient in vitamin D, for example, and need to take a vitamin D supplement.
Well, I know I could sit here and ask you questions all day long because, again, we just do not get the training in this in medical school. But if you had kind of one message for patients and for physicians and nurse practitioners that are referring patients to you, what do you want to leave the audience with?
I would always encourage other medical professionals to just utilize our services, where dietitians are maybe underappreciated in the medical community. And I think it's just because people don't know what a dietitian is. They don't know what we do. So definitely reaching out if you have questions and letting us be the nutrition experts that we are to help out your patients.
Right. How do we make a referral?
So we do require a referral for all of our services, including medical nutrition therapy and our diabetes self-management training. You can send us a referral through the Epic system. We have referral codes that are pretty simple. And if you don't use Epic, we do accept some faxed referrals.
Well, yeah, thanks. Thanks again. I know I learned a lot. And thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Right Care at Baptist, or watching in this case. Remember, if you follow the link in the show notes, you can redeem this episode for CME credit.